We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey guys, time to get in on the action for the biggest moments in basketball with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projections, place your entry, and win up to 100 times your money. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit of up to $100. Just download the Prize Picks app and use the code GET100. That's code GET100 on Prize Picks for a first deposit match of up to $100. Prize Picks, pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Red Lake Roundtable. And this time, I am so pleased to welcome in Scott Williamson, your 1999 National League Rookie of the Year. Scott, thanks for joining me.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Hey, again, thanks so much. And I guess I wanted to start out things by asking you, does it ever get old being introduced as the Rookie of the Year?
No, not really. But, you know, everything's like based off my rookie season. So, I mean, I feel like I had a decent career in a sense other than injuries. But yeah, I mean, it's a great honor. I mean, you can only have one shot at it.
Well, sure. And certainly I want to talk to you today about that 1999 season in part because it was your rookie year, but also it was such a magical season for Reds fans and for the team alike. I guess, can you believe it's been 25 years since that season?
Oh yeah, I feel old. I just got finished hanging out with Pokey and Dimitri and Eddie and a lot of those guys at Fantasy Camping.
Yeah,
you start looking at each other, we know it's been 25 years.
Sure, no doubt. Well, I guess every show I've done, or if I do have a personal connection, it's not like I've met you in person before, but I had a memory today of the day they announced that you had won Rookie of the Year, which is obviously after the World Series. I was at Ohio State at the time as a student, and I remember we didn't have smartphones back then, right? The technology was a little different. I checked into a little campus store that had Apple computers set up that you could check out to see if you want to buy it. And it happened to be an internet connection. So I logged in and tried to find out if you'd won Rookie of the Year. And sure enough, you did.
Yeah, we probably had a lot of dial tones back in those days.
Yeah,
so AOL.
That's right.
You know, I was actually at my hunting ranch with my dad and stuff, and kind of got away from seeing if I won or not. And then I got the call from my agent and stuff, and ended up going back to Houston that night to have like interviews with people and like whatever the little pod, I know not really a podcast then, but little camera thing. But it was awesome to be, you know, nominated for that and actually get the call with my father. That was pretty cool.
That is really cool. Well, I guess the last thing I'll ask you before we get into kind of your life and your career in baseball, can you remember much about that 99 season? And again, to fans, that's, I know you didn't go to the playoffs because of the circumstances involved, but boy, that was such a memorable season for all of us.
Yeah, I mean, I was really lucky. You know, I came up and right off the get-go, you know, the team didn't do well. And then all of a sudden after April, took off. And I just think it was a community, like a bunch of guys that, you know, we're a bunch of young, we had a lot of young guys, but we had some really great veterans. And I think that with Greg Vaughn coming in, that was unbelievable. You know, Pokey Reese, I had a really awesome time going, getting called up at the right moment with all those guys. You know, I had a lot of really good guys, especially really cool veterans that took me under their wing and helped me out to the, you know, the good and the bad. I've been with other teams where a lot of veterans didn't do that. So mm-hmm. I was very fortunate.
Well, we'll get into some of those guys individually here in a little bit, but you were born February 17th, 1976 in Fort Polk, Louisiana. Whereabouts is that in Louisiana?
That's actually an Army base. I was actually adopted at the age of four. So once again, I got lucky right off the get-go in my life. It's actually, it's like in between like Shreveport and Lake Charles. It's out in the middle of nowhere.
Middle of nowhere.
I know so many people ask, like, were you an Army kid or something like that? I'm like, no. but obviously, one of my parents were my dad or my mom. I don't know.
Sure. Okay. Well, you attended Tulane and then Oklahoma State. Certainly, you stayed down in that area a little bit, but then you get drafted by the Reds. I want to ask you, I had memories of when you first came up. They talked about someone who had taught you, was it the split finger?
I read that on the back of a baseball card one time, and I'll be honest with you, Bruce Sutter never showed me anything. I don't know where the Bruce Sutter thing came from. I actually was my senior year of high school, and one of the guys, Trey Walsh, on my team had a really good knuckleball.
Okay,
and I was just playing with the ball to try to figure out how to throw a knuckleball.
Uh-huh.
And I just spread my fingers really wide and get on both sides of the seams and just threw it, and all of a sudden, kind of a knuckleball came out. And then I just, you know, played with it, and then tried it in a game, just threw it to see what would happen. And that's where
I remember that story. I mean, somebody picked it up off the, like you said, the papers or a baseball card or something. And I remember on TV or somewhere they talked about Bruce Sutter. And today when I was thinking of it, I was like, I want to verify this. And I couldn't find anything about it. And now I know why, because it's not even true.
No, it's not true. His son was my catcher. I was
okay. That's probably where it came from.
And his son came up, and I don't know. Maybe it looked like Bruce Sutter's, and they put them together. I don't know. But I actually threw a forkball. I taught myself it. You know, I never disclaimed it or made any issue because I had so much respect for Bruce. But
well, we're breaking news.
Someone asked him, they'd be like, "He didn't teach me it." Yeah. I mean, I talked to him when I was in. You know, he would go down the left side of the field all the time, and I was a starting pitcher, so when I didn't pitch, I'd go down and talk to him. I mean, how could you not, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
A pitcher of that stature. But he never taught me any pitches.
Okay. Well, you were drafted by the Reds in the ninth round in the 1997 draft. Do you remember draft day?
Yeah, I do. I was just waiting for a call, you know, to find out. I remember a lot of the people I talked to said I'd be like between the first and third round. Even Baseball America and all that said that, and then I fell to the ninth round, and actually Jim Gonzalez, who was the scout that actually got me out of Oklahoma State. I think he's with Washington now, a great guy, unbelievable guys. He was a young guy, and he said somehow my name got taken off the board, and that's how I fell to the ninth round. He actually asked him, he said, where did Williamson go? What round did Williamson go? And they said, he hasn't gone yet, and he took me in the ninth round. That's the story he told me. Wow,
that is pretty cool. You only spent 2 years in the minor leagues. You went to rookie ball in 97, and you went double A and triple A in 98. What were those 2 years like for you?
It was, you know, going from Oklahoma State to Billings, Montana was a shock.
Yeah.
You know, go from really nice stadiums and playing, you know, top-notch players and all that, and the camaraderie you have in college, and then go to rookie ball, which is out in the middle of nowhere, and you know, it was a little bit different. A bunch of young kids and, you know, a mix of everybody. But that year, I think the Reds sent all their draft picks in the top 10 rounds to Billings. So there's a lot of guys that were drafted pretty high that were from college that had really good college careers there. So that helped. But I'll tell you what, I loved Billings, Montana. I mean, it was a great place to start. The fans are great. You know, Terry Abbott was awesome. And we won the championship. So that helped out, too.
Okay. You know, I had Adam Rizzola's on my last episode, and he had played at Western Michigan, so he wasn't used to the nice bigger college stadiums and the treatment that you got at the bigger conferences and things like that. So he thought Billings was just great as far as the crowd support and things like that.
Yeah, that was a small crowd from Oklahoma State.
You had a good program.
I mean, some of the fields like Butte, Montana, it was like playing – it was, that field was worse than high school. I mean, it was pretty brutal. But, you know, I mean, the camaraderie in baseball is what it's about. You know, that's what I miss the most is hanging with the guys and stuff like that. But, you know, then I remember, so I got done with the rookie season and they sent me right to Double A the next year. So right. I was pretty excited about that. And then my first start in Double A was against John Smoltz on a rehab assignment. And so I haven't swung a baseball bat since high school, you know, because you don't swing in college and stuff like that. And that's the first guy I faced since high school. And that wasn't fun.
Well, that's not normal.
No, it wasn't normal. I had him throwing, and then Dallas Perez right behind him with left hand throwing about 95 to 98.
I remember him, yeah.
But well, yeah, Double A was great.
So you mentioned that you were a starter for those 2 years, and you mentioned you were a starter. Starter your whole life. When did they come to you and tell you, hey, you're going to make the ball club out of camp, but you're going to be in their bullpen? Or how was that decided?
That's a funny story. So Jim Bowden came up to me, I think it was like halfway through spring training. And he said, look, the chances of you making the team as a starter is pretty slim, even though I was doing well. Mm-hmm. He said, but have you ever relieved before? And I'm like, no. He's like, well, I think you have a really good chance of making the team out of spring if you go to relief. So I was like, whatever it takes to make the big leagues, I'll do. And so the last like 2 weeks of spring training, I was trying to relieve, and I was going out there out of the rotation. Instead of being in the setup, I was, you know, like I was a starter, and Tom Heumann got on me all the time about it. Like, hey, man, you got to speed stuff up, you know? Uh-huh. So I had to learn how to be a reliever in 2 weeks. And then I think we had like a few more games, like two or three games left. And Rick Stowe comes up to me. I'm in the bullpen at home in Sarasota. And he goes, hey, what number do you want? I'm like, what do you mean? You know, because I think I had like 66 or something. I don't know what number I was. And I'm like, wait, what do you mean? He goes, what do you want, 48 or 99? And Jim Bowden wants you to be 99 because that's how hard you throw. I'm like, what the hell is this about? You know, I'm like, well, I'll take 48. I'm going to take a 99. And I was like, Rick, what's this mean? He goes, well, it's for the big leagues, for opening day. I'm like, oh, so I'm on the team. Oh,
okay.
For the club, he actually is the first guy who told me I made the big leagues.
Well, some guys find out they get traded on Twitter nowadays. So
yeah. So then I got called, you know, after the game to congratulate me. But actually, Rick Stowe told me I made the big league team during a game.
Well, that's a decent guy to hear it from. Yeah. I got you down as 12-7 with a 2.41 ERA, 19 saves. You kind of split that role with Danny Graves a little bit, and you threw 93 innings, and that's something. The first episode of this show, we had Eddie Taubensee, he and I talked about you and Sullivan, Scott Sullivan and Gabe White and Danny Graves just throwing so many innings. You guys really were just a lot different than it is nowadays, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, it was the only time ever in my career I had thrown all those innings, you know, the first few years I was here with Jack. Yeah. But, I mean, I think it's good and bad. I think it wears you out, but I also think that, you know, I was used to throwing a lot of innings anyway, a lot of pitches, being a starter. The thing that was hardest for me is, you know, that you're in every game almost. Like, that's what it felt like. We had one of the best bullpens, if not the best bullpen in the league when, you know, first few years I was here. And, you know, I mean, it was Sully, Danny, and myself always throwing. So it was like, you go to the ballpark and you're like, man, you know, I don't need a day off. But, you know, we were winning. So you just keep going. And I was told that rookies don't get days off anyway. So,
no, and I remember last year the Reds had their 12-game winning streak, and you're like, Alexis Diaz cannot throw every game, you know, at this point. You've got a league going into the ninth, but I'm sorry.
It's hard. It's hard. It wasn't really the games that was hard for me because I threw even more games later on, but it's the amount of innings that I would pitch when I went out there. I would go four innings, two innings, three innings, two innings. You know, rarely did I ever get like just an inning.
Yeah.
You know, pretty much like that for Danny too, in some sense. Danny never threw four, but I was a guy that would go in there. If I went in the seventh, I finished the game. If I went in the sixth, I finished the game. Jack never pulled me. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't get any relief.
Well, you made your debut on April 5th, 1999. This is against the Giants. You went one inning, you gave up one hit and had a strikeout, and that was on opening day. So I guess the jitters got shaken out pretty early, didn't they?
Well, yeah, I had a funny story about that. So the hit was Ellis Burks. Mm-hmm. He was the very first guy I faced in the major leagues. And I ended up playing with him in 04 when we won the World Series in Boston. And I went up to Ellis. I said, hey, Ellis, could you sign this ball? Because, you know, you're the very first guy I ever faced in the big leagues. And, you know, you about took my head off. you know? And he started laughing. And I'm like, I just remember I got like 0-2 on you. And I'm like, I'm going to throw this one right by him. And he laced it literally right at my head. And I turned around. I said, welcome to the big leagues, Willie.
That's right.
You know? I wasn't accustomed to being hit like that. I mean, he smoked it, you know? And Ella's like, man, this little guy come out here throwing hard. He's like, I couldn't let you beat me, you know? But yeah, it was. And then I went for like a week or so, 2 weeks. I didn't do so well.
Okay.
I don't know if a lot of people remember that, but I had like a 27 ERA. And that's I remember rough. Going to the bathroom or coming to the ballpark, and they used to put like the clippings in our chairs back in those days. And so I pick up the paper and I go to the bathroom like all of us do and open it up. I'm reading a big old headline. Clock is ticking for Williamson. I'm like, oh, crap. I'm reading this. I mean, they're talking about comparing me to Todd Van Poppel, you know, brought me up too soon and all this stuff. I can't handle it. And I'm like, golly, I'm going to get sent down. And, you know, and I walk out of the bathroom and Stan Belinda was there. And then Stan Belinda, you know, pretty much had a lot of words for me. You know, he's like, you're some of the nastiest stuff I've ever seen. You're going to go out there and you're going to pitch like you're did in spring training and you're going to throw your doggone fastball. You're pitching scared. And he's like, you're not going to give up a run until I tell you you're going to give up a run. I'm a rookie, so I'm terrified of this guy, you know, 10, 11 year vet.
Yeah.
And so I went out there and that's when I turned it around. You know, I remember I got my first save. It was like probably like a week and a half later. And I forgot who it was, Bell or someone hit a home run off me. I pitched 3 innings. And a lot of people were like, man, you know, you're upset about the home run. I'm like, no, I was more scared about Stan Belinda when I came in after the save that I gave up a run before he told me I could give up a run.
Yeah, that was April 25th at Houston. It was a 7-6 win. You did pitch 3 innings. You struck out 4 batters. So you may have given up that run, but you definitely earned your save. Your first win came on April 28th in Philadelphia. Again, 3 innings, striking out 5.
Yeah,
that's kind of the way you were out there, wasn't it?
It was always 2 or 3, 4 innings.
You did not pitch in the 24-12 win at Colorado. And it's funny, Eddie Tobinski said he didn't get a play in that game either. What was that like? Do you remember that game? That was crazy.
That game was so long.
Yes.
I mean, it was so long. I don't know how many pitchers we went through, but I know Denny Nagel started that game. And it was hot. And, I mean, I only know how many innings he lasted. Like 2, 3, 4, I don't even remember. And then Ron Ballone came in. I mean, it was seriously like the longest baseball game. It gets right. to the point where you're like, just get out. Just, you know, who cares? You know? Because, I mean, we knew we weren't going into the pitch, and you're just sitting there watching that debacle.
Yeah. From May 15th to May 23rd, you piled up 4 saves. Things were starting to go for you and the team. They had a rough April, but things started really picking up there in May.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Greg Vaughn came in and lit us up at the end of April. And, you know, I remember Greg Vaughn. I mean, if you don't know Vonnie, I mean, he's a little bit, you know, intimidating. I mean, he's a big boy. And mm-hmm. he's just so fiery and such a into the game. And I remember in spring training, I was standing in the outfield, and I wasn't saying much to anybody because I was, you know, you're nervous about talking to any of those kind of players when you're a young guy. I mean, I don't know how it is now, but it wasn't my day.
Sure.
And he finally came up. He's like, Willie, you're going to be on this team, man. Gosh, dog it. I like how you pitch. And I was like, thank you, sir. You know?
Yes,
and
sir.
Then when he came in April and lit the team up, I mean, I couldn't get far enough back in the locker. Man, I was like, man, please don't call me out. Please. But, I mean, he was the reason, one of the main reasons we did what we did. There's mm-hmm. no doubt. He expected every one of us to produce.
Yeah.
You know, and that he's one of the only superstars I ever played with, and I played with a lot, especially in Boston, that if he went 0 for 3 and we won, he was happy.
Okay.
If he went 3 for 3 and we lost, he was pissed.
Mm,
you know, okay. That's the kind of player he truly was. And
yeah.
It just breeds. And Larkin was awesome, too. I mean, Larkin doesn't say much, but he's a leader on and off the field. So
sure.
you want to be a professional. And I think with those two guys, it was a great mix. Just an unbelievable
awesome.
Mix.
Yeah.
And Pete Harnish. Pete Harnish ran the pitching staff.
Okay.
You know, which is Pete's awesome. And so
yeah.
when I see a lot of these teams, I'm like, man, the chemistry has to be, you need two or three guys that can bring all those young guys up and keep all the other guys in order.
Yeah, no doubt. Now at the All-Star break, you're 7-4 with a 1.66 ERA and 11 saves. And here you are, the rookie. You make the All-Star game with Sean Casey and Barry Larkin. You go to Fenway Park. And I know later you would pitch for the Red Sox, but you make the All-Star game. What was that like for you?
Oh man, I didn't know what to do. Yeah. I got to know Billy Wagner and guys like that. I don't know, it's kind of weird how it happened. So I kind of hung on to their coattails, and they, you know, took me around. But one of the best guys there that really made me feel comfortable was Sammy Sosa. And wow. Sosa really took me around, and like in a home run derby, made me sit by him. So, you know, I have a lot of respect for those kind of guys. And I mean, it was a great, I mean, to be right there and watch the all-century team come out, guys that you worship, and be on the same field with them. I mean, you can't even explain it.
No, that was, and then I remember the moment with Ted Williams, and yeah, that was just an electric atmosphere, even on TV. I can't imagine being on the field. I remember Casey was running around with his camcorder. I don't know if That's you remember
right.
that.
That's right. Huh? Ted actually came right between Casey and I. So okay. That was pretty cool to be that close to, you know, a legend like that.
That is cool.
And then Junior was awesome too, because I was really close to Senior. So I was standing there, and he came over and punched me in the shoulder and said, "That's for my dad." You know, so that was awesome too, to have a guy on the other side, you know, that I worshiped too growing up. Oh, yeah. to welcome you. So, I mean, the guys are great.
No, that is really cool. Now you get back to the season. It's 49-36 at the break. It really felt like things were starting to pick up for the Reds. And just you had a great, you know, last couple months. And the funny thing is, people think, well, you know, they must have blown it at the end. No, that you won 96 games. You actually went 19-9 in September, which would seemingly put you right in the playoffs on every other year. You picked up your final save in Houston, which was pivotal at the time, in a 4-1 win on September 28th. So I was wondering about that. I was thinking about, did you hit a rookie wall at any time? Because, again, you threw all those innings.
Not really. He just started kind of using me differently at like in the last like 2 or 3 weeks.
Okay.
You know, he would pitch me an inning here or this and that, or it was just a little different. He started letting Danny save more of the games. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know why he changed, you know, doing that. But it just felt like that to me. And then the Milwaukee game, I actually split my finger and my thumb on a fork ball in the eighth, and blood was coming out. And so I went out there and tried to pitch through the ninth, and then I got pulled. But okay. I mean, I had a 1-something all year. That's what pissed me off. I actually had like a 1.7, 1.8, 1.9 all year, you know, and then the last two games got me.
That's tough. And you know, I remember, like, I have certain memories on things, and I remember it was actually around the time we were supposed to move back into our college apartment, and my college roommate and I were going from Columbus to Dayton to get some furniture back and forth from his parents' house. And I remember being on I-70 listening to Marty Brenneman call your game, and people don't understand, you were unhittable. Like either you threw strikes and they didn't swing, or they swung at pitches that they had no business even trying to hit. Like, and it was that.
Welcome.
Well, okay, that's fair, but no, I mean, that season specifically, guys were swinging at things. I remember just Marty just getting so excited about, you know, describing how you, in your split finger, your fork bar, whichever you want to call it, how you were able to just dazzle people with that pitch.
Yeah, you know, that's what's so funny to me, because everybody talks about the fork ball, but mm-hmm. actually it's my slider that was my best pitch.
Okay.
I could control it. I threw it hard. It had a lot of break. The fork ball for me was like a one and done. I threw it, you know, to one hitter or maybe twice in a bat, maybe if I was ahead. I could never throw it when I was behind because I didn't know where the heck it was going. I mean, it was just a hard 90-something mile per hour knuckleball. I had no clue where it was going. Neither did Eddie. That's why I felt bad about it. I mean, I don't know where it's going, bro. It might go right, left, straight. I don't know what it's going to do.
Sure.
I'm just throwing it as hard as I can. But it was a slider, I think, that helped me out the most. And I remember watching a game, because now you can watch them on YouTube and stuff. And it was a game in May at Met Stadium. And Joe Morgan was talking. And that's all he kept talking about was the forkball. Like, you know, I'd get on my out with that or throw a bunch of them. He kept calling it forkball. And I'm just sitting there watching going, man, that's a slider. That's a slider. I can throw it with way more downward action or just a normal slider. You know, it's like, and that's the funny thing is, halfway point, Stan Belinda came up to me and said, "Hey, look, you throw your forkball," because at that time, I only threw my forkball to a lefties. I never threw it to a righty. And he's like, "You got to switch that up. You got to start throwing that forkball to righties, throw the slider to the lefties." And I'm sitting there going, I got a 1-something ERA. And yeah. I was always told, if it's not broke, don't fix it. You know, just keep going with it. So I go out there, I think, the first few games, and then all of a sudden these guys are just spitting on it. I mean, they're swinging, and I'm just basing it, you know. So I was like, all right, I might want to listen to this guy. So I go out the next games, and I just started throwing a forkball to righties. And, man, that was probably the most fun I've ever had, watching them buckle on that pitch, you know, and the lefties looking at me like, what the hell is that thing? You know, because I was throwing the slider to him, not the forkball. And then about, I think I had like two or three good weeks with that, and he goes, all right, switch back. I'm like, okay.
Scouting reports change, and you've got to change.
Well, yeah, he's like, switch back. Now I'll just start, because they have no clue which one's coming. Mm-hmm. You know, so I got really lucky with some veterans like that that would teach me. I remember, like, that was like the first two or three games. I used to pitch when I first came up, or pretty much my whole life, with a finger outside the glove. And Pete Hart's like, hey, you know, you tip your pitches. You know, when you throw your slider, your finger goes up. Oh. And then when you throw your fastball, you like curl it. And I'm like, what the hell? So I just put my finger in the glove.
Yeah, they couldn't see it.
But it's like guys like that. I mean, people, you know, want to say you were nasty, you were all this. But I had a lot of good guys that helped me out that if they didn't teach me the things they did, I might not have had the career or even that much success. You know, mm-hmm. I could have came up, had a little bit of success, and not make the adjustment and leave. You know, so I got lucky. I really did.
Well, okay, so I guess we have to touch on the fact again. We've talked about this great season, 96 wins, but then it ends up with that weekend in Milwaukee that just was awful with all the rain and the cold, and then you had to come back and play those Mets on no rest.
That was unfair.
Yeah,
I still remember this day they could have pushed that game to the next day. You know, they were already at in Cincinnati in their bed, sleep. I mean, it wasn't fair. We didn't get finished with that game. I don't remember what time it was. It was really late. And then to travel back and then have, I forgot what, a 5 o'clock game or whatever it was, 6 o'clock. I don't really remember. But, I mean, a lot of guys will not say or use the excuse they were tired. They'll say that Al Leiter beat us. I think we were tired. We were sluggish. That's my personal opinion. We had that game was supposed to be like a 1 o'clock game.
It was.
We were in a clubhouse all day long. Mm-hmm. You know, and anybody that's been through rain delays are brutal.
Well, and you had to use, because of the way a bad thing happened on one of the first on Friday or Saturday, you end up with having to pitch, you know, some of the pitchers on Sunday that you would have rather, you know, saved for that game if you would have. And then, like you said, the fact that the Mets were sent to Cincinnati.
Yes.
And they're in their beds. I always pictured them eating like Montgomery Inn or something, and then some graters, and then heading off to bed, and you guys are still, you know, waiting for the charter to leave Milwaukee.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it was unfair. It wasn't because of what we did. It was because of the weather and the situation. And I think they could have easily pushed it back one game or pushed it back, you know, to a day game the next day or something, to just to have a fair chance, you know. But that's baseball. They want to get the playoffs started.
Sure.
I mean, I understand that too. But, I mean, everybody wants to question a lot of stuff. And I've been in a lot of pivotal games that, you know, people like to question, like the Pedro. But I don't know why we didn't start Denny Nagel. Why you start Steve Parris? I have no clue. I would have started our bullpen before Steve Parris.
Yeah,
I would go with the guys who were. I mean, Steve Parris had a good year. He did, but in that situation right there, he wasn't the guy for that job. I think that was unfair to him too.
Sure. Well, and I was at that game, and I just remember the atmosphere was so electric, and it was deflating that it just went away just like that. So yeah, but that'll be my all time favorite team. Until maybe I celebrate with one of my sons, you know.
It was definitely my favorite team. I mean, I won the World Series in 04, and we should have won in 03 with Boston. Just a great group of guys. Won a ton of games. Probably the best teams I've ever been part of. Right. But the 99 team by far was my favorite season, with just how all the guys were in that clubhouse, on and off the field. You know, the friendships you make and how we won games. I mean, it was exciting. I don't know how many comeback wins we had. it was a lot of walk-offs.
Yeah.
And it was unbelievable. And then the game in Philly where those guys hit so many home runs.
Right.
I mean, I also watched a lot of games. I'm like, man, this is the big leagues. Jeez. This is fun.
Do you remember, you know, the thing that was invented that year was the bounce when yes. there was a walk-off? Eddie claims he invented that, or it was his idea.
I don't know who invented it.
He told me to call Aaron Boone, but I said Aaron's got a pretty serious job right now. I don't know if I can.
I would have to probably go with Dimitri or Greg Vaughn or one of those guys probably.
Well, maybe I could talk to them too sometime, and they can shed some light on that. I wonder your thoughts on in 2000, you kind of got switched back to the starting role for about 10 starts there. How did you feel about that? How did you go? What was it like to go back and forth to those roles? Or
I was excited. That's what I wanted to do anyway, was start. I felt like I was always a better starter than a reliever. I was pitching so much in that first half. And I was like, finally, I was like, man, this guy, you know, I'm pitching way more than I did in 99. And I was like, I want to be a starter. There's no reason I can't. I could be the best starter on this team, hands down. And finally, Jack came to me in Arizona. It's like, you want to start? And I'm like, yes, I want to start. He goes, all right, man, you got your first start is the game before the All-Star break against Cleveland. And I'm like, all right, thanks, Jack, you know. So I'm sitting there, and I'm coming back on an airplane with Big Sweat, Dennis Reyes. Yeah. I'm like, hey, Sweaty, who's Cleveland got? He's like, well, you got Manny, and, you know, you got Travis Fryman, and he starts naming all these freaking
Jim
dudes.
Tomey.
Yes. And I'm like, going. I'm like, all right, you can stop. I'm like, this is so he's doing this on purpose. That's my first start in the big leagues against Kenny Lofton and all those guys. Roberto Alomar. I mean, come on, man. I mean, you could ease me into like a Cubs team or something, you know. But I went out there and I did well. So
I didn't look that one up. You did pretty well that day.
I did. What's funny is in 99, Omar Vizquel. Uh-huh. Hit me for a home run, well, an 0-2 pitch that walk off, right? So that hurt. Well, in 2000, I was starting, and I think it was a sixth inning. I had two outs. Throw a pitch, and he hits me an 0-2 home run again.
Oh, no.
And so I'm like, you got to be freaking kidding me. And here comes Don Gullick out. And so Gullick gets there. He goes like, all right, man, you hit your pitch. I was like, you're not pulling me. This dude cannot knock me out of two games back-to-back years. He goes, Scott, I got to get you out of here. You hit 75 pitch count. I said, I'm not coming off this mound. Let me pitch to the next guy. And he's like, nope, you're done. So that little booger, friggin', who probably lifetime seven home runs, hit two off me. And he's the only guy, if I recall, that's ever hit multiple home runs off me in his career.
Wow. Okay.
Omar Vizquel.
Yeah, and you never would think of him as a home run hitter. No.
Heck no. Walk off and then knock me out as a starter. I'm like, dude, this dude. I'm walking in from now on.
Well, fast forward to 2003. They move into the new ballpark. If I looked it up correctly, I think you had 21 saves before the trade came. And I know that was a tough couple weeks there. Bob Boone lost his job. Aaron Boone gets traded to the Yankees, which we'll touch on that in a second. You go to the Red Sox. You pitched in all five games of the ALDS against the A's. You went 2-0 with a 0 ERA. Yeah. So you finally get your taste of postseason play and you're just lights out.
Yeah. So I was the first one out in that fire cell. And so I didn't want to get traded. I wanted to stay in Cincinnati. And most guys will tell you that. It doesn't matter if your team's losing or if they're winning. If you come up with an organization, you get comfortable. They know you. They know, you know, it's just very comfortable. And so I really didn't want to get traded. And I remember going that week before I got traded, everything was me going to AL East. And I'm like, God, man, please don't freaking trade me. You know, come on, sign me to a multi or something. I don't know. Yeah. I'll stay. And then I remember the day that I got traded, it was just all about, you know, Williamson to the Yankees, Williamson to Boston. And I'm like, God, I'm freaking gone. You know, because when I got to the clubhouse, the freaking manager's fired, all these people, I'm like, oh, God, I'm gone. So the fifth inning, I always had like a routine. I'd go to the bathroom, blah, 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 you know, just kind of get away from everything. And then I come out. And so when I came out, Tom Hume actually had my glove in his hand. He said, I was like, I got traded. He's like, yep. That's how I found out. And then I get in and go in there and my whole locker's packed up. And I was like, golly, man, that's pretty quick. You know, then you talk to their GM and stuff. And 2 days prior to that, I had a baby, my first child.
Okay.
So that was tough. So I got a newborn. My wife's not doing well with high blood pressure and whatever it is when you bleed more than what you're supposed to. I had to take her back to the hospital the next day. And then I'm like, golly. So I talked to Theo, and one of the best GMs I've ever been part of. I mean, I've ever met. He's like, look, stay with your family a few days. Meet us in Baltimore, because they were in Texas. And I'm like, all right, thank you, man. I wasn't expecting that. And then I got over there, and I did well the first, like, you know, I think outings I had. And I got the call that my son might have spinal meningitis.
Oh no!
And it could kill him, and I'm like, oh my God! And then I went for about 5 days going through that, that I gave up the butt on the baseball field. Mm-hmm. I gave up four in Cleveland and didn't get an out. And I mean, it was that bad. That's why the ERA looks so bad, like a six something. I gave up like six runs and like no innings in that 5-day span. And then Tony Clonger pulled me aside and we went out to lunch and we had a great talk. He was going through bladder cancer and stuff like that. And I explained to him what I was going through. And then I got the call that he doesn't have spinal meningitis. I mean, it was awesome. And then I got back to the field and Theo called me in his office. And I'm like, oh God, man, they're going to release me right now. I just got traded. It's like, shit, it's a tough crowd. And he like looked at, he said, listen, Scott, what do you need? Do you need to go home? We know what we traded for you. We know what kind of pitcher we traded. You're not that guy right now because what you're going through, what do you need to do? And I'm like, no, I'm going to stay here and I'm okay. And then I don't think I gave up like one run the rest of the time I was there.
No. Well, and again, the ALDS, that was incredible. And of course, that brings you back to confrontation with Aaron Boone. I know you didn't give up the hit, but man, that one will go down in history as one of the most amazing home runs.
That stunk. Nail against Oakland, I was the only pitcher that pitched all five games, which was the first time I've ever done that. I mean, it was a lot of multi innings once again, some of the games. And I remember after game four, I was talking to TC. We were actually in Oakland now. I was with TC, like, how you feel, man? Tony Clonger. And I'm like, TC, my arm's freaking hanging. I was like, dude, I can't even hit the freaking my throwing partner right now. And I just pitched two innings, and I forgot what it was the day before. I'm like, he's like, oh, that's right where you want to be. And I'm like, okay, man. I'm seriously having trouble throwing to my warm-up partner, Mike Templin. I'm like, the dude's running to the fence 24. I mean, it was bad. And then, of course, I went out there and walked the first two guys. But then the next day, after that, we go right to New York, and I close out that game. And then they had Gabe White that I played with that year, Felix Heredia, and Aaron Boone on that team. They had three of my teammates over there. So it was kind of weird, you know, playing against your teammates. And I had, Jose Guillen in Oakland. So it's like, geez, man, Reds freaking team all over the place. And then, so we do that. And then I remember in game seven that everybody likes to talk about, what really happened from our standpoint, what we heard in the bullpen. And what our bullpen coach does, he calls us after the seventh inning. And so Pedro goes out there and he said, hey, look, the eighth inning, it'll start off with you, Timlin, then Embry, and then the ninth, Willie, you got the ninth. All right, that's how it's going to be. So Pedro was done from what they said when they called down. He was done. Mike Timlin had this guy, this guy, this guy. Embry, you have the big lefty Japan guy,
Matsui,
and if it gets to Posada Williamson, you got him. So you might have to pitch the eighth and then finish the ninth. I'm like, all right, that's no big deal. So they already had the plan. Well, all of a sudden, if you ever watch the true video, like the thing, you'll see Timlin starting to walk down.
Right.
So Timlin doesn't even understand he's not in the game. And so they open the gate, and Mike Timlin's actually starting to walk onto the field, and he sees Pedro running out there. And so he looks back up and comes back. He goes, what the hell's going on? And Yuki Rojas was our bullpen coach, who's awesome, said, I don't know. I don't know what's going on. They told me exactly what they were doing, what y'all are going to pitch. And he's like, I don't know what to do. And so Tillman comes back up. And, you know, of course, we know what happened in that inning. So it's getting closer during that inning. That it's getting closer to Posada. And so I'm like, Yuki, am I supposed to be warming up? They said I have Posada. And he's like, I don't fucking know. I don't know. And I'm like, so I'm nervous as hell saying, what if Petey gets to Posada and I'm not warmed up? And they come and say, all right, Williamson, you're in the game. I'm still sitting in a little box down there. I didn't know what the heck was going on. So that's the worst part of the game to me. I've never seen a game where you felt you have it. Like, it's good. I mean, our bullpen gave up, I think, one run in 20-something innings. And that was me. That I gave a home run to Ruben Sierra on a pitch I never threw before. A four-seam fastball in. I've never done that ever in my career. Veritek called it. I threw it. He hit it out of the ballpark. And Veritek's like, that's my fault. I said, yeah, I've never thrown a four-seam to that side of the plate ever in my career. He's like, well, that's my fault. Yeah. So But that's beside the point. But so we're all sitting there, and to sit there and watch, you get the first out, and then also, okay, double. So we're thinking, okay, man, if he gives up a hit, you got to bring Timlin in, right? I mean, we're giving up one run in 27 innings. We own this team. There's no way they hit all three of us. I mean, we got five outs to go with three of us. There's no chance they win. There's no chance. Timlin doesn't do something, we got Embry. And the chance of all three of us not doing well, it was slim to none. And so we just watched that debacle. And it's like, geez, three runs, two runs, one run, tie. And it's like, now you bring us in. And then those guys did great. Timlin went in there, did his job. Embry did his job. And if you had done that from the get-go, the game would have been over anyway.
Was that Grady Little? Was he the manager?
And then he tried, pissed me off about Grady. And I'll say it to him. I don't care. It's like, you can't use your bullpen early in the year or even mid-season against your decision of what you did in that game. You know, I wasn't there during that season. We were all pitching lights out. So there's no reason to say, well, my bullpen was shaky all year. I had more faith in Pedro. Dude, what do you mean? We gave it one run in 27 freaking innings. Mike Tillman didn't give up a hit in the whole postseason. I gave it one hit in the postseason. That was the home run. Mm-hmm. I think Embry gave up a little dinker. We gave it like three hits, 20-something innings. Don't tell it. You know, don't say it's because your bullpen. To me, we had the best bullpen by far. You had three closers going out there. And we all threw different, which was huge. It's the same as 99 team. Every guy in that bullpen threw different, and I think that's why it made it so effective. Not one guy threw the same.
Well, you were on that team in 04. What was that like to be a part of all that when the curse gets reversed?
That was a tough year for me. I was healthy. And then the doctor said, I went up to him, and I said, I always get tendonitis around May, you know? And then Krimchek always gave me Anacin, anti-inflammatory, blah, blah, blah. He goes, well, if you took a cortisone shot, then you go on a DL for 15 days, and then you never have to take the anti-inflammatories, everything be good. Well, I was like, I've never had a cortisone shot before. So he said, just do the cortisone shot. So he shot me in my reconstruction with the cortisone shot, and that's where it all started. It started unraveling my surgery. So every time I went out there and threw it, it just kept like making it looser and looser and looser until it just fell out. So I battled all through that. And then through September, I just kept battling through it. And then I had to go back-to-back days. They're like, we just want to make sure you're okay for the playoffs. And at this time, I was taking a shot of Marcaine and a shot of lidocaine in my elbow. One side on both sides, outside, inside, just to go out there and pitch. And so I call Krimchek and say, Doc, what should I do? I mean, it doesn't seem right, but I don't want to give up on the team. I'm a fighter. And he's like, you could go out there and never pitch ever again if you keep doing that. And I'm like, all right. So I went up to Theo. That was the hardest decision I ever made. I went up to Theo and said, look, I don't think I can pitch, but I'm going to keep taking all this stuff to pitch. And Krimchek said that I might not ever pitch ever again if I keep doing it. So I pretty much told him. And then Theo was like, well, I agree with that. So we'll keep you off the playoff roster. And so that was tough pitching and going through that whole year, even pitching at the end. I mean, I had a good season too. I mean, they couldn't hit me. I mean, I had a nasty sinker because my elbow was going all over the place. I mean, the ball's, I probably should have just kept it. I mean, because it was unbelievable. But it hurt. It hurt really bad. And I was always taught you just pitch through pain. You know, keep going. And so I listened to a doctor that I cared about that had the most respect for me, how he went to my wedding. So, I mean, I knew he loved and cared about me personally, not just as a ball player. So I listened to him and, you know, at least save myself and pitch longer. You know, but that was tough watching the World Series and stuff after Tommy John surgery.
Yeah,
but the good thing is how close that team was. They all called me when they were in St. Louis and said, hey, Willie, we want you to come to St. Louis. Okay. So get your broken arm up here and come. And I'm like, I would, but I just got out of surgery. And I felt like crap, you know. And so it was a great group of guys, and I was so happy.
Well, it's definitely, I mean, in the history of baseball, it's one of the best stories.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the down 3-0 and coming back and beating the Yankees, the team that they had struggled so much against, you had struggled so much against as a team. I guess I want to talk here in a few minutes, and then I'll let you go. But
one thing, AB thing. So I'm sitting there because I got to talk about AB. So I'm sitting there, and so Wakefield comes down.
You're talking about Aaron Boone, AB. Yeah.
Yeah. Aaron Boone. So Wakefield comes down to the bullpen. And I'm sitting there going, what the hell is fucking Wakefield doing down in the fucking bullpen? So we're like, he's like, well, I might have to pitch. And I'm, well, and on the road, your closer, I mean, I don't have to, it's not like at home where I have to pitch the ninth. I can wait till we get a lead. Sure. So I understood that. So I'm sitting there and he pitched a good inning. And then I'm like, Yuki, who do you have up coming up? And he said, Aaron Boone. I said, oh man, I don't like this. I don't like this. And Yuki was like, what do you mean? Oh, he's fine. He can't hit him. I said, dude, let me tell you about Aaron Boone. This dude got rabbit foot up his ass. I said, this guy can be 0-50. And you put him in this situation right here, he will hit a home run. I tell you, I watched it my whole career. He's unbelievable clutch hitter. It's unbelievable. And first pitch, boom. I'm like, told you. I looked at Yuki and said, told you. Told you. So he's unbelievable in this situation. Well, you know, that's a testament to AB. I mean, he was a great teammate. Great. But that dude is clutch. I mean, he is a clutch hitter.
Yeah. I mean, I was there. He hit 3 home runs in a game when I was there in Cincinnati and early in 03 because it was in the new ballpark before he got traded. And I mean, he's the guy that got thrown out of his first game. He got thrown out at the plate. And
he's a great manager. That dude was fun. That dude would get up on a bus and do like the hitting, like you about, like he's Dennis Mankey. I mean, he was funny. I mean, the stuff that dude, he's very witty, very smart, intelligent guy. He's just a funny guy. So I bet I would love to play for him. I bet he's a great man. I bet.
Hey, I guess I just saw Carlos Pena. He told a story about Bobby Higginson when he was playing together with him up in Detroit. He said he took one of their teammates' car. And he told Jason Benetti, the broadcaster, he said, and he hid it from him and made him think that somebody had actually stolen his car. Oh, and he goes, what do you mean? What are you talking about? How can you believe that? And he goes, he kept it from him for 7 days. Jeez. He hid the car. So I wondered, I read that right before we got on the call. Do you recall any like pranks or stuff like that you're talking about with Aaron Boone? I've heard some things from Sean Casey over the years, stuff he said, but do you recall any pranks or anything like that, especially with that Reds team?
Oh, man, we had a bunch of clowns on that team. So, yeah, Denny Nagel was a clown.
Oh, yeah.
Peter Harris is a major clown. We had a lot of guys that were just, I mean, unbelievable clowns. So pranks, I mean, they always played pranks on everybody. Like, I remember, I'm trying to figure out what I could say. I remember, I can't say that one. Pete Harris was the one that was crazy. I mean, he has a big, you know, sack. And so he would put it in paraffin wax and then go hang it in rookies' lockers in spring training. You know, fill it with candy and act like it's a piñata. You know, I mean, stuff like that, naked jumping jack. I mean, this dude was crazy. But one of the best pranks of all was Bernie Stowe. So Bernie Stowe had this apron.
Clubhouse
like manager. Like a cooking apron.
Yeah.
And so he comes up to me, you know, I was a rookie. He goes, hey, you want something to eat? And I'm like, I'm looking at him like, what do you mean? Do I want something to eat? He goes, you want something to eat? And I'm like, yeah, Bernie, what are you cooking? And he's like, sausage. And you pull it up and there's a, you know, a thing hanging down, you know? And I'm like, this old dude just freaking does that. So I watched him do that all the time to young guys. Yeah. You know, I was a young guy. I'm like, you are something else. And then when I actually had surgery, when the team in 01, when the team would leave, I would go to the stadium to do my rehab. And then when the team came back, I would go out to Krimchek's because Lonnie Soloff was our physical therapist, who was one of the best ever. And so he would stay back with me to rehab me at the stadium. And then when the team came back, I would go to Krimchek's. And so I would go to the field like at 8, 9 in the morning, right, to Synergy. And so Bernie learned my routine. He learned exactly how I came in, what I did, everything. So I go in one day and, you know, the lights are always off. You know, you flick the lights on. So I turn the lights on and I walk. I get, you know, I get dressed and I go to the bathroom. And so I'm walking to the bathroom, my stall. And I open it up and here comes Bernie jumping out at me. You know, there's nobody in this stadium. I mean, about had a heart attack. I'm like, damn, Bernie, man, you're a crazy old bastard, you know. And so weeks go by, maybe even a month. And now I go and I lay on the training table. And all of a sudden, I feel these hands come up. And I'm like, what the hell is this? He got underneath the training table, put all the towels around him, and then did that to me. And I'm like, this dude's crazy, man.
This is Bernie Stowe, the clubhouse
Bernie Stowe, old Bernie Stowe doing this. It's like, I mean, just got to love him, you know? I mean,
yeah.
Guys would do that kind of stuff. And then I remember when we, a rookie, they call it hazing now. I think it was funny. But we come in, I think we were at home. We were at home. And we go in, and you're, obviously your suit's gone. And there's this little Dallas Cowgirl cheerleading outfit in there. You know, I'm like, come on, man, I'm not putting this on. You know, that's the time that we had to walk through the airport. It's not like yes. You know, later on. I'm like, crap, man, I got to walk through the airport looking like this. I mean, Diddy Nagel got this, and he got him like two sizes too small. You know? So we looked horrible. It was me, Jason, and Rue. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is terrible, man. You know, a little hat, a little boot. I mean, it's like, man. So we're walking through the airport, and these people are just staring at us like we're crazy. You know, the worst part was LaRue and I are both from Houston. Mm-hmm. So they got us when we went to Houston where they knew our families would be waiting at the hotel.
Oh, no.
So it's nothing like you walking in and your father just looking at you going, oh, my God, what's my son? What happened to my son?
No changing on the plane, huh?
I mean, no. All the way back to the hotel. My dad, I'll explain later. And he's like, right. Please don't.
It means they like me, Dad. Don't worry.
I mean, I think that's fun. I think that makes camaraderie. I think it's great. I don't know why these guys nowadays think it's such a bad thing. I think it's funny. I mean,
yeah, I think certainly maybe at some junctures it went a little too far. Maybe.
Oh, but, I'm sure it does, like always. But for the most part, these guys, they care. Yeah. Most guys care about you. Everywhere I was, that they made the rookies do that, the guys loved them, you know, and they always take care of you at the end of the year. So it was never, I mean, I remember going, I lost my mini bar at my hotel all year. So it always went to someone's like Larkin or someone else's freaking room, and they would come back empty. So the guy would bellhop, come in, drop my suitcase off and take my mini bar out. And I'm like, no. Come on, man, let me have my mini bar. And I watch it go out, and then here it comes the last day. Here comes my mini bar back empty. So you go check out, you got $500 bill. I'm like, come on, man, I am a rookie.
Yeah.
They took care of me at the end. So, I mean, it was, so they pay you back. It's
that's
great.
Good. Hey, I'm way longer. I'm 5 minutes longer than I told you, but I'd like to ask you about a few of your teammates. And especially, you know, I've had position players so far, not pitchers. So I guess if you've mentioned some of these guys, but if you'd expand on Stan Belenda a little bit, I remember the TV broadcasts where they talked about how he took you under his wing a little bit.
Yes, he did.
And it, not only you knew that privately, but you know, folks knew about it, and it certainly showed. And I, you know, stats wise, he wasn't nearly as good as some of the other guys on that bullpen. But boy, he seemed very important to you and to some of the other guys.
Yeah, he was definitely my mentor. I remember giving him so much credit at the rookies, the thing they did in Houston, and especially in New York when I got it. And I just remember him saying, oh, you did it. He wouldn't take any credit. I'm like, listen, Stan, if you don't come to me when I had a 27 ERA, put me up against a wall and just chew my ass out, that I would never have done that. And if you would have told me all the stuff you told me throughout that year, what to do, you know, I remember he's like, we go to LA. He's like, don't answer your phone. I mean, I had to sit by him on the airplane, had to sit by him on the bus. I mean, he showed me the ropes, how to keep myself in the right situations and not get out of or go into the wrong situation. Cause it's pretty easy in the major leagues to do that, especially at that time. So, you know, I was always a kid that always wanted to listen and learn. And so I listened to everything the man said, and he was great. I mean, especially if I had a bad game to a good game, you know, he was always there. I remember when I struck out, I forgot it was six or seven guys in a row when I came in against LA, I remember coming off the first inning, and he just starts chewing me out and synergy, you know, you're right there in the dugout. And he's walking back and forth, cussing and freaking. I mean, throw your goddamn fastball, yeah, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, what the hell is this dude doing? You know? And he just keeps going. Gosh damn it, Willie, we're trying to win here. Damn it. And I'm like, this dude's starting to piss me off. And so I go out there and I pitch. And I want to say it was almost all fastballs in the second inning I throw. I forgot Mondesi and all them, all three. Boom, 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 boom. And I come back and I say, I throw my gosh damn fastball that damn time. He goes, Will, you look up that screen. You just set a major league record. I'm like, what? And so I asked him the next day. I said, why the hell did you do that? He goes, because you walked off with a smirk after your first inning. And I'm like, I did? He goes, yeah, you were a little happy, too happy at what you're doing out there. I had to bring you back down. And he's probably right. He's probably actually right. that I probably felt too comfortable, you know, and that's when you get hurt in baseball, is when you feel too confident. And so he switched it over and pretty much pissed me off, which I pissed my best when I was mad. Sure. So it's stuff like that that I don't think these organizations take into account. You know, you need guys like that, especially for your young guys. You need guys that will take you under their wing and help you out. When I went to the rotation, I remember Benito Santiago, who I really didn't care for that much. So I had my first start against Cleveland at home. I'm like, hey, what do? I just go out there, because sometimes it's different than major leagues and the minor leagues as a starter, you know, when batting practice. And so Pete's like, hey, man, you just go out there. If you want to hit five pitches, hit five pitches. If you don't want to swing, don't swing. Go back in the clubhouse. I'm like, all right. So I went out there and I hit like two rounds. I'm like, all right, I'm good. And so I go in. So he told me just go in. And Benito Santiago comes in there and just starts yelling at me about, you're supposed to pick the balls up and blah, blah, blah. And then Pete got him. I mean, Pete freaking tore him up, you know, about that's damn starting pitcher. You don't talk to, you know, guys like that will protect young players. You know, to me, it was vital. And so, I mean, Ron Valone was a huge mentor for me too, on and off the field.
He had a great year that year.
Oh, he was huge. Great. B was huge to me. Pokey Reese, another huge one. Sean Casey was huge for me on the field. How he could just keep you excited, how you can keep you motivated to do well. Like, I mean, I'd walk three guys and Casey, oh, you're all right, baby, you got it, you're good. And I'm like, dude, I just walked three freaking dudes. You know, that's how Casey was, you know. And I had Lark, who was more professional, coming up to talking to me about what to do, you know, which I relied on a lot with him. I would look back, and if he kind of went like this, I mean, I had the right pitch, regardless if he thought the right pitch was, or even saw it, I don't know. But somehow I would look, and if he put his head down, I would step off. So he was huge. You know, Sully and Big Sweat and those guys, that's who I hung with off the field, like, you know, at the hotels and on the road. So, I mean, it was a bunch of guys that really helped me throughout my career, especially early on, what to do, what to do and what not to do. And there's a lot of easy ways not to do something. Sure. And so when I went in the rotation, Pete Harris pretty much took me on his wing about what to do as a starter. Because, I mean, you got a few free days, you know, and that's something new to me, you know, at the big league level. So I kind of got a little too wild a little early on, and Pete ended that real quick.
Okay. Well, last thing I'll ask you about, and you mentioned those guys in the bullpen, but you mentioned earlier how it's good to have different type of guys. I mean, you know, Scott Sullivan coming sidearm to three quarters, Dennis Reyes, the left-hander, throwing just fire, Gabe White, a lefty as well, and then you and Danny Graves, kind of the co-closers in 99. You couldn't be much different than Danny Graves as far as what, you know, the pitches you threw and how hard you threw. That bullpen was very well-rounded, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was okay. So my throwing partner was Dennis Reyes. He was one of my best friends on the team. Him and Pokey were probably my best friends on the team. And you know, obviously Stan Belinda. And so Big Sweat, he called sinker and a cut. Big Sweat had no clue what the damn ball was doing. He was just nasty. The ball moved all over the place. So you got a lefty coming there throwing, you know, firm, very firm, with movement, so much movement. And then you got Sully, who's throwing like 85 down there, 86, but just a bulldog. You talk about a guy that if you look at him, it's like, man, how's he pitching at big leagues? But then you watch how he goes out there to pitch, and it shows you don't need to throw 100 to freaking get guys out. That dude wasn't scared of anybody. He would go at anyone. Ask Jeff Bagwell. Sully owned him. I mean, absolutely owned him.
He did.
Owned him. God, it was like, I feel sorry for you, man. I mean, Jeff, just go back. Just say I'm good. Three, I'm done. I'm out. And then Danny with a hard sinker, you know? I mean, Danny had a hard sinker and nothing really other than that. But, I mean, how you pitch with one pitch in the big leagues, look at that guy. Look at Derek Lowe. I mean, sinkers are nasty. And if you have one, I mean, it just kills all the other pitches off. I mean, Danny could just get a ground ball at will. You know, which is really cool. And Danny threw firm too. I mean, Danny, no one gives Danny the credit that, I mean, Danny threw hard. I mean, he didn't throw 100, but he threw 93 to 95. I mean, Danny threw hard with sink, you know, which is awesome. You know, so us four guys, and then you had me who come in there, you know, threw harder than them with the breaking balls. I mean, it was pretty comfortable if I was a coach on that staff. If one of these guys falter, I pretty much have these other guys that can pick them up and you know, we all felt comfortable with each other, you know, coming in after us to get us out of the situation. But I always tell people, your bullpen is only as good as your starters. People don't give – our bullpen was really good because our starters of Denny Nagel, Pete Harnes, Ron Valone, you know, and Guzman, when he came over, they were pitching late in the games. Mm-hmm. And they pitched really well. And so it's not like we had to come in with you know, like losing. We were, like, winning a lot when we all came in. So it's a lot easier to pitch to me when you're winning than when you're losing or tied, you know. So when your starters are doing what they're doing and keeping it close, it's a lot easier for a bullpen to be successful, you know, because that's where we're being, you know, you want your best players pitching when you're up, you know, or tied. I mean, that's just what you want. You don't want your closer pitching when you're tied or friggin' down one. You mm-hmm. want him when he's up. So you're not using him in bad games. And so your starters are what the key is to me for a good bullpen. And you need a bunch of guys who throw a little bit different. If you throw all guys who throw hard with this pretty much the same stuff, I don't see how that's effective. You know, the hitters don't have to adjust that much.
Well, yeah, they get that timing down. Well, Scott, I mean, thanks so much.
The 99 team, all of us were different. And then I go over to Boston. Timlin was, you know, tall, 6'6", threw a hard sinker, 94, 95, 96, sinker straight down. I mean, it was nasty. You know, a little breaking ball. Then Embry was a straight cheese from the left side. I mean, just boom, right at you. And then you had me with the breaking balls and the speed. So it's like, what poison do you want? So they had three different guys coming at you. And that's why we all three did so well. And I look back, and that's why the 99 team did, and the 2000 team did well, because, you know, the bullpen, every guy threw different. And then when we lost Dennis Reyes and we lost those guys, that hurt. That hurt.
It did. Well, for Reds fans of my age and maybe even a little younger or older, it's the idea of the 1990 the Nasty Boys. And then I see,
I mean, we broke a lot of their records. So I don't know why they keep calling them nasty.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I'm
saying,
man, you got three guys like that, but they all threw different too. But they all threw hard.
Right, they did.
I mean, what's his name? The lefty. I mean, he was
Randy Myers. Yeah.
Yes. No, not Randy. The other
guy. Norm Charlton.
I think he was the best of all of them.
Yeah, he might have been.
I mean, you got the meanness. You got. I mean, that dude was a gamer. Hey,
Mike Scioscia, didn't he?
I had the luxury of playing with him when he made a little comeback here. Dude, that dude's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just, and then he doubled, was a feisty freaking herd. I mean, those three tough dudes right there.
All right. So I guess, but all these, you think of the Royals that won the World Series, you know, some of these teams over the years, I talked to Steve Fizioc, he called the Angels games in 02 when they won it, and they had Percival and Francisco Rodriguez. And I mean, it just seems like there is a recipe there, isn't it? So if you could just follow that.
I think you need two or three guys in your back end that can get guys out of will, you know. Yeah. And if one falters, because we're human, we can't do it all the time, you know. And what I loved about how Tito and guys like that would use you, especially in Boston. When I went over to Boston, it was a little different than Reds. When I went to Boston, they said, "Hey, look, you're so much better starting an inning, or coming in with two outs to get the strikeout." You know, when you are brought in with one or two, it kind of takes your effectiveness of the strikeout away, you know, because you're a guy that goes at them. You won't punch outs. You know, it's very effective. You got two outs. Okay, go ahead. You walk a guy. Who cares? You know, you don't give up many hits. And so I started all the innings. You know, if I did come in, it was two outs and bases loaded, strike a guy out.
Sure.
You know, they brought Timlin in to get the double play. And so Timmy always went in there to get that double play. And then Embry was kind of like me. But Embry was a little bit better coming in innings over starting an inning. So they used us perfectly for what our strengths were. And then, I mean, you always had one of us to back each other up if something went wrong. But if you put that pitcher in the best situation, like, you're not going to – if you put Danny Graves in there to strike a guy out because you need him to strike out, it's not going to work out well for Danny. You know, sure. Or if you're trying to put me in there for a double play, probably not going to work out so well for you.
Yeah, the context,
I mean, that's just – so I think a lot of times that's what these coaches really need to start looking at. What kind of type of pitcher do I have? Where is he the most effective? So if he's a strikeout pitcher, who cares about walks? You know, Nolan Ryan taught me a lot because I grew up with Reese Ryan and all them right there, because Alvin's right next to Friendswood. So we all grew up playing, and actually he helped coach us one year. I think we were 18 or 19. And he's like, but who cares about walks? Mm-hmm. Why, if you strike people out and don't give up many hits, who cares if you walk people? You can walk three guys and strike three guys right back out, you know. So that was always my mentality, is I don't want to give up a hit. but I don't care about walks. So Bob Boone would always get so upset. Oh, man, you walk me. I'm like, yeah, Bob, did I give up any runs? Did I give up a hit? No. So who cares?
That's right.
Yeah, but you had the bases loaded, and you had Rondell White, Vladimir Guerrero, and this guy's like, what did I do to him? He says, struck them all out. Okay.
You gave him an ulcer, but you got the job done.
I mean, when you go for strikeouts, sometimes you walk people. Oh, that's last funny story. So Pete Harris, I remember I was out there my first or second game, first, maybe the second game. Harris like, hey, man, Willie, look, man, you throw a lot of pitches. Because, I mean, I always threw a lot of pitches as a starter. Didn't bother me. He's like, yeah, but you need to start pitching more to contact as a starter. I'm like, all right. So I go out to Colorado, and I take his philosophy out there. And so I give up, I think, two runs in the first two innings or two or three runs in the first two. He's like, Willie, go back to that other shit. That shit ain't fucking working. This is during the game. I'm like, yeah, I mean, I'm pitching to contact. I'm like, I don't pitch to contact. I pitch away from contact, you know? And then I remember the start, I think it was against Philly. Senior took over the manager job, right? Because I forgot what Jack had a wedding or something. So he actually got my start, and I was still on like a pitch count at that time. And so I think I hit my pitch count like around the fifth inning, right? I see him stand up, and he sits back down, and I was pitching well. I think I gave like, you know, barely a hit at that time. I was dealing. And so I go out to six. I do the same thing, you know, boom, do well, come back in. I see him up there. Man, he's all nervous, man. I'm like, what the hell is wrong with Senior, man? He walk halfway down, go back. I'm like, what the hell, man? So I go out there and I pitch the seventh. I don't even hit the bottom step, and Senior's like, you're Don Williams. Said, gosh damn it. And I'm like, damn, man, it's seven. I mean, I just pitched seven innings, you know, just did really well. I go up to him, I'm like, Senior, what the hell? He goes, God, you were on like 115 pitch count. You just do 140 pitches. I'm going to get fired after this goddamn game. But you were throwing so well, I couldn't take you out. You were, hell, your last inning, you were throwing harder than your first inning. I'm like, yeah, I get better. As a starter, I got better as the innings went. So after like the third inning, I actually started throwing harder. I got better with my slider because I would stop overthrowing it. So I got a lot better control. So after like the second or third inning, I mean, I got better every start the deeper I went. My whole life I was like that. The first two innings were where I struggled because I was always trying to overthrow or something like that because I felt fresh. And that's why I had a tough time as a reliever sometimes. Because I go in there, man, I mean, it's just tough that you have to – the hardest thing – I think relieving is by far the hardest thing to do in baseball, by far. The hardest guy to pitch is like the sixth and seventh inning guy. By far, that's the hardest thing ever. I think is the hardest. Closing was easy to me. You knew when you're going in. You knew what you had to do. There it is. Yeah. You know, if you're up two, you can give up one run. Lost. I mean, you still do your job. But that sixth, seventh inning guy, that's tough. Eighth inning sometimes are tough. You know, and so those. I mean, it's, to me, they don't give relieving the credit it deserved. It's hard. I think it's one of the hardest things in baseball to, and what a lot of people don't account for is all every time you get up and get down, up, down, up, down, up, down. Jack McKean was notorious. We call him dry humping. I mean, it was, he's notorious for that. I mean, you might get up three times before you actually get in the game, or you might get up three times and not even pitching a game. And then you go to the field the next day and hey, oh, you're fresh. You haven't pitched. I'm like, what are you talking about? I just threw three innings in the bullpen.
That's right.
I mean, I gotta be the only guy still in all-star history to have three dry humps and not get in the game. And I mean, I remember Wagner and all them started making fun. He's like, man, Willie, you threw three dry humps in an all-star game. I'm like, that's pretty impressive, ain't it? and then pitch. But I got three innings in the bullpen.
There you go. Well, you were ready for what Jack was going to do the rest of the year.
I had some words for Jack after that. I was like, you serious? I'm the only pitcher that don't pitch. And you warm me up three times. But we needed a guy at the end. I'm like, bullshit.
No doubt. Well, hey, Scott, thanks so much for all this time. This has been great. The stories are great. The 1999 season will live on, and it's been 25 years. We both can't believe the gray hairs were growing.
I know they got Dimitri and Pokey being the Marshalls people.
Yeah,
so it's awesome that they're recognizing that team because, I mean, it's one of the best teams the Reds ever had. You know,
I agree.
Especially one of the best teams that's never made a playoff. But, you know, you win 96 games. I mean, Boston, we won 95, 96 games every year, 2 years. Sure. And went to the playoffs. So it's amazing that that team that we won 96 games and didn't even make a playoff was actually amazing to me.
That is true. Well, hey, I hopefully maybe I'll talk with you off the air here. I'd like to chat with Dimitri and Pokey sometime too.
Yeah, those are great guys to talk to. They really are.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you.